or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
This hour, you are stuck with me. No guest, no flash, no nothing. It's just me. So, if you or someone you care about is stuck in your career or their career, I don't care if you're, as I want to say, W-O-N-T, whether you're 16 or 76, clerk or CEO, for-profit or non-profit, self-employed or unemployed, this is a great time to call. I'm going to be doing workovers through much of the hour. Workovers, no pummeling, but I will pummel you potentially with questions to try to help you get clarity about what you should be doing next as a next step. If you would like to call, price is certainly right. Another phrase I like to use is zero zippo nada. The cost is nothing. So thanks to KALW and me. The phone number here at KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Very often the standard kind of technique for presenting articles, you present a problem, then you present solutions. So while I'm waiting for your calls, I'm going to present a problem. This seems scary to me, at least. There is a website called freelancer.com, and it came up with an article just recently called Ready to Take on a New Role? See 2015's Hottest Jobs. They made my stomach turn, because I cannot imagine that most human beings are going to be jumping up and down on this. Now, by the way, these are the kind of high-level jobs. The recent job reports that show a relatively rosy job picture don't point out the fact that most of the job growth has been for very low-level jobs that do not pay a living wage. We're talking about hotel cleaners, fast food service, all the rest of that crap. But if you don't want, if you don't want to do that, understandably, potentially, although all work is ethical work, really, really, really. But if you're looking for where are the more lucrative jobs in 2015, this is why my stomach turned. This is the list. UX designer and developer, that's user interface. Mobile app developer. PHP developer. For those of you who don't know what PHP is, it's a programming language. SEO specialist, that's search engine optimization. Quality assurance engineer. Copywriter, I guess that's advertising, website, catalog, copywriter. Data scientist, that's big data analysts, big spreadsheets, algorithms, multiple regression equations, Bayesian statistics, those are the things that are embedded in being a data scientist. Content manager, I guess that means running a channel on some website for a particular content vertical, whether it be fundraising or medical devices in the wearable space, who knows. Translator, yes, we are certainly a nation of immigrants and ever becoming more so. So translator, very, very important. PPC specialist, for those of you who don't know what PPC stands for, it's pay-per-click. Those are the hottest jobs of 2015. As I think upon my listeners here at KELW and frankly my clients, there are not very many of them who would say, Eureka, I have found it, when they see that list. But I would be remiss if I simply talked about the careers that we KLW-type people and Bay Area people tend to, who are not techies, fundraiser and creative artist and writer and psychologist and social worker and teacher. But that's not what seems to be where the jobs are that are in demand. Perhaps even more pukey to me was this article that appeared in LinkedIn about the seven trends that are most dominating in landing a job. Again, this feels very, like everything is getting ratcheted up. Everything has got to be technical. It's harder. Listen to this. First key 2015 trend in landing a job. Number one, social networking continues to dominate. LinkedIn reports that recruiters' use of social networking, that is Facebook and, of course, LinkedIn and Twitter and probably to a lesser extent Pinterest, Instagram, and the rest of them, increased the use of social networking by recruiters for jobs increased a, and I'm reading a quote here, a phenomenal 57% over the last 4 years, which means that whether you are actively looking for a job or what you call the passive job seeker, which I'm going to mention in a minute is the most attractive kind of job seeker for employers, passive meaning you're not actually looking for a job, but if something great came along, you take it. You can't afford to ignore social media. So when I have a client coming in and say, you know, I'm just not really, I don't have a Twitter account, or I really don't post on it very often, or, oh, my LinkedIn, yeah, I've got a listing there, but my picture and my summary, and I don't really have much going in there. Unfortunately, I don't like that crap. I mean, I don't like that. Resume was enough. Now you got to have a resume, and you have to have a LinkedIn profile. It's just getting harder to land a damn job. But it's reality. Again, I have to, if I am to serve you, my dear listeners, I have to tell you the reality, not what I like or what I would like. Next, and here we go, ratcheting up even more. Number two in the LinkedIn list of seven major trends for 2015. Video recruitment is on the rise. This article urges you to, quote, find or create a short video, less than 2 minutes in length, to attach to your LinkedIn profile. Use your video to showcase your career brand, experience, and history of achievements. Alternatively, focus on one or more of your key accomplishments to date and share it in CAR format. Challenge, action, results. Number four in the trends for 2015 in landing a job. Mobile computing drives innovations. As mobile device traffic grew 81% last year, it continues to drive the preference and need for short, lean text in job search communications like emails, cover letters, resumes, bios, and LinkedIn. Cover letters, for example, should be shorter than 250 words. That's like three or four paragraphs. And resumes are trending towards short summaries, paragraphs, and achievement bullets with less dense text than was acceptable. Certainly, I'm seeing that. People, you know, unfortunately, I don't care what the government statistics say about employment. In the real world, even if it's Walmart, when Walmart is hiring and opening a new store, thousands, literally thousands of people line up a day in advance. My very white-collar clients are applying, and they're hearing that there are dozens of applicants with master's degrees, technical skills, all applying. And so the employers are not reading the applications with great care. They're overwhelmed. And so it's got to be crisp. It's got to be short. And if it's written by a resume writer or a cover letter writer, let me tell you, employers know it, because there is a gap between the person's work history and what the resume and cover look like. So if the resume sounds like a super high flyer written in the King's English, and the person, for example, is a new immigrant whose English is not that good, they know it's just, you know, gift wrapping. It's not reality, and it gets tossed. So it's got to be brief. It has to be in your own voice, and it has to be credible without any BS, because indeed we're getting ever more sophisticated in, not we, employers are, in reading this stuff. And so they know, in people's desperation to land good work, they do all kinds of things. So their BS detectors are out in full force. Number five in this LinkedIn article about how to land a job. Number five says, thought leadership via content development. That's fancy terms for, if you want to be credible these days, you've got to write, if you're at all a decent writer, you've got to write your best ideas. It says, I'm reading now, quote, the launching of LinkedIn's blogging platform offers job seekers an exceptional branding and thought leadership opportunity, which eliminates the need for a separate personal blog. Yes, blogs are very useful, whether it be on LinkedIn or your own personal blog, as a way of archiving your best thoughts. And that's a great way to show a potential employer that you bring something to the table. That you're not just going to be another doobie. You know, there's certainly many, many employers, that's all they want, is somebody who's just going to routinely do the tasks or whatever. But for many of the good jobs, they do like people who are up to speed, up to the minute, knowledgeable with what's current in the field, fresh new ideas, and a blog is a great way to indeed present that. And that I find valid, because resumes are full of crap all the time. And so they're not a valid indicator. It's a valid indicator whether you're going to pay for a resume writer or that you've spent weeks on creating your flashy infographic resume. But if you've got a blog where you're writing not only your best ideas, but the best ideas from your wide reading, that's credible. That's a real job sample in some sense. So that's that one I like. Number six in the LinkedIn articles list of what the trends are in 2015 hiring, quote, external talent opportunities increasing. That's a really deceptive way of saying they're outsourcing more jobs. In fact, when you read this part, that's what it says. This is one of the biggest shifts underway in the U.S. economy is the movement toward outsourced employment. It's absolutely true. A survey by the American Institute for CPAs and an acronym which they don't explain revealed that 33% of respondents say that at least half of the organization's workforce over the next 5 years is going to be, quote, external talent. I love their phrases. In the form of consultants, contractors, freelancers, outsource providers. Their full-time benefited jobs are going away because the cost of hiring, as we've said ad nauseum on the show, the cost of hiring a full-time benefited person continues to rise, whether it be the cost to employers of Obamacare, increased Social Security limits that have to be paid by employers, paid family leave, whatever, increased lawsuits for employment lawsuits by employees. Employers are ever more, and I've said this for years, but it is really true, unless you're a star, you must make peace with the fact that at least your initial employment is very likely to be a part-time temp project, and which, if you prove yourself, maybe they'll offer you something permanent. Okay. My board operator asked the question, if an employer has no time to read a long resume, will she read somebody's blog? Two things. Well, the resume is something that everybody knows is kind of a BS document, so it gets a lot less serious attention than if somebody has written a blog with best ideas. They won't read it necessarily with great detail, but if you can read the title and the first few lines of 10 blog posts, you can do that in a minute and get a much better realistic sense of that person's competence than a resume, which too often is written by a resume writer, or at least, you know, copied or cut and pasted and adapted from a resume book. Resumes have lost credibility big time. Number seven, and the final of LinkedIn's top tips for, not tip, trends in employment hiring. This is really true, and again, I've seen this really accelerating over the last years. It's the quote, passive recruitment is vital. 72% of U.S. companies recruit passive talent, while only 61% of global firms do, but over half. What is passive? As I said a moment ago, most employers, of course, if you imagine you owned a candy store and you were looking to hire somebody, wouldn't you feel better about somebody who was currently working than somebody who was long-term unemployed? And somebody who's currently working and not actively pursuing jobs, doesn't have this fancy infographic resume, doesn't have the lingo down perfectly, is a more appealing candidate. So the message of this is for you, don't appear like a job seeker, even if you are a long-term unemployed person. If you have this really primped up resume with all the jargon, or let alone an infographics resume with these cute graphics that portray you in a picture, and you've got this fancy video resume, and you're using all of the jargon about delighting customer expectations and exceeding customer expectations and team playing and all the rest of it, you just sound, you know, even the word seeking. How many people in real life use the word, I am seeking? Nobody. It's only a job seeker word. And the more of that job seeker language you use, the more likely an employer is to say, this is a desperate person. That's why I have long urged, while I am certainly not averse to technology, I am on my computer all the time, and I do actively use, I blog and Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. I do it all, and I certainly recommend it to my clients. But really, in my judgment, notwithstanding the comments in this LinkedIn article, jobs are best gotten, good jobs are just gotten, best gotten old school by one of two methods. Three, yeah, answering some ads if you really are a great fit, but two, making a list of your 25 most targeted employers you'd most love to work for without regard to whether they're advertising a job. Show that list to the 25 people whom you know who care about you the most and may have connections. If they have a name of somebody who works there, fine. If not, it doesn't matter. Use what I call the call, email, call method to make contact with those 25 target employers, not human resources, but ideally the hiring manager, which you can often find with some clever Google searching. And then you call them after hours. You, in 10 seconds, crisply make, or 30 seconds, make your crisp pitch for why you are worthy, what you bring to the table, and why, if you're so good, you're looking. And then immediately after that, send a brief cover letter, a brief email to that person that reiterates it in writing. And then a week later, if you haven't heard, you follow up with a phone call to make sure that it hasn't fallen between the cracks. That old school method ultimately is going to be a better way to land jobs than all of the putting tremendous effort into the perfect resume, the perfect blog, the perfect video, etc. It is, and I want to stress again, that if you can get your people, your 25 people who know you, to make a referral in, the best jobs are filled by referral. Google almost never hires from an ad. I know people at Yahoo, they almost never hire from an ad. They hire from a referral of somebody who is a respected person, potentially usually an employee at the company. That is my brain dump about landing a job, but now I want to help you. If you or someone you love is struggling, either because you're unsuccessful or because you're very successful and still are unhappy, any question related to your work life, I can usually be of significant help. For why don't you call in? This is a good time. I do have call on the line, but we do have lines open. So this is the best time to call in the beginning of the show before it gets full. So if you would like some career help for you or someone you care about, the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. Thanks for your patience. How can I help?
Is it me?
It is.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for your show.
You're welcome.
You have helped me so much already this
I'm glad.
Morning. I don't have a high level job or anything. I have a job as an administrative assistant, but I have done accounting in the past, but it's been since 2008 since I've done accounting.
Okay.
And the accounting positions that I see pay more than the job that I have now. I just need a better salary. That's basically what I needed. I've done healthcare, medical billing, and medical administration, and I've done accounting, and now I'm an administrative assistant in a very low-paying job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where to go.
Okay.
I don't know what to do.
So do you, first of all, do you, you know, while certainly there are laws constantly changing, but basic accounting has not changed a whole lot there. The things that a public accountant does, are you a bookkeeper or an accountant or a CPA? What level are you in accounting?
I'd say I'm accounts receivable, payables, collections, billing, that type of thing. I'm not an accountant.
Okay, so you said account. Okay, so more of a bookkeeper.
Yes.
Okay, and if you were talking to the goddess within you, and the goddess within you was talking with you, would the goddess say, how would the goddess rate your, what letter grade would the goddess say your skills are in bookkeeping, A, B, C, D, or F?
I'd say C right now because I haven't done it in a while.
Okay.
My career has gone all over the place, and that's my problem because I don't know where to go.
Okay, well, I will do my best to help you. So in your heart of hearts, if you could become a B accountant, would you like to do that or not really?
Yes.
Do you think you have the potential with some preparation to become a B accountant?
Yes, but I haven't done it since 2008.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. The next step, if you would like to do that, it doesn't often, courses take a long time, and very often they're very inefficient in teaching people stuff because the course is taught at the instructor's pace or at the average student's pace in the class. And you're taught a mass of information, much of which you forget. But if you hired a tutor, and it doesn't have to be expensive. You told me you're a low-pay person, so I'm not saying hire some $50 an hour tutor. But I promise you that there are people who are basic bookkeepers who, if you were to contact them and say, I could use a tutor to get me back up to speed or further ahead in my bookkeeping skills. I can only pay you $15 an hour. Would you be willing to tutor me? Doing that and having an hour a week of tutoring, and in between working on an accounting project. Let's say, I'm sure there is software that you would be, QuickBooks, for example, which is your basic, I'm guessing, still bookkeeping and accounting software. If you work on improving your QuickBooks skills with an hour or two a week with a tutor to help you with that, you could, within weeks, maybe months, gain enough confidence to make more than what it sounds like you're making $10 an hour as, you know, in as your administrative assistant job. I'm just reading between the lines. Am I right?
A little bit more than that, but basically not much more.
Right, like 12, 10, 11 or 12 bucks an hour, right?
Yes.
Right,
yes.
And you want a little bit. So if you could get your accounting skills up to a moderate, your bookkeeping skills to a moderate level, you're good for $15 to $18 an hour. And it sounds like that's the little bit amount more that you want to get. And so it seems to me the most direct route to that would be to get a tutor in your accounting skills, and it's something very common like QuickBooks. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. Thank you so much. And you know, the dollar amount that you gave me is my aim as far as, you know, starting when I start something new. So thank you so much.
Sure. Well, I just listened pretty carefully. You said you don't need to make a lot more. You just want to make a little more. So you said you were being paid crap as an administrative assistant. So I'm assuming that was 10, 11 bucks an hour.
Yeah.
And you want a little more. So I was assuming that was 15 or 18 bucks an hour. That's
just
common sense.
Oh, thank you.
All right. You take care. You know, there is a little lesson embedded in that. Everybody thinks they're a good listener. Most people are terrible listeners. Really are. They don't really, really focus there. It's a lack of caring. It's a lack of everybody's into themselves and into how they're looking and sounding and appearing and their feeling and everything. Listening is hard. It's a lot harder than people think. But if you completely give yourself to the other, when you're in you know, there's times for you to talk and time for you to take care of yourself. Absolutely. But when you are in listening mode, you have a sacred responsibility to really give every bit of your laser beamed attention to that person. When that person called, it's not fun or easy to call a radio show, to admit your vulnerability, to say you're working for $11 an hour. So I had a cosmic responsibility to listen really carefully. And each of you, when your friend or your colleague is talking to you about something more important than the stupid Golden State Warrior game or the latest pop culture idiocy, but talking about him or herself, you have, in my judgment, a cosmic obligation. If you're the caring person you claim to be, and everybody does, we're all so pious, we claim to be so caring about society and people, think globally, act locally, and yet in our own actual interactions, we act like exactly the kind of people we say we despise. So walk the talk, dude and dudette. Listen carefully. Okay, phone number here. Work with Marty Nemko. If you need some help with your career, I promise to listen carefully to you. That you can be sure. The phone number here at KALW and Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's the number if you need career help. And the price is, of course, zero. 415-841-4134. Next. I think I want to talk about, I've got two choices, I'm deciding between them. I should talk about, I think I need to do this. You know, I really care so much in this world where it is so hard to land a good job unless you're a star, that self-employment does make sense, but self-employment is so hard. I mean, we all hear endlessly how 80% of businesses are out of business in the first 2 years. So that's where I got really obsessed about this with my clients and in my own writing about where the answer, what's the sweet spot. And so that's where I came up with a concept that I have mentioned before but want to stress here in the context of the difficulty of landing a job, and that is to clone a shoestring business. Many businesses fail because they run out of money or because they try to sell an innovative product or a service and the leading edge turned out to be the bleeding edge. Well, you help prevent both problems by choosing a simple, low-cost, long-proven business concept. For example, a flower stand at a BART station, or a shoeshine stand downtown or at the airport. And the key to success is those are businesses you can observe. Quiet business-to-business businesses are done in the privacy of an office behind closed doors. But these retailers, you can observe them. And then open your first location incorporating the best of all those you saw. So if you're going to open a flower stand, go visit the ones that are busy. Watch everything they do. Make notes. You're a detective. And incorporate that into your first flower stand. No, you probably can't make enough money to live decently with one flower stand. But when you've got that location running smoothly, the key then is to clone it in another location. Yes, you probably need to sit in that first location for a while until you've learned the business. Then you hire generally a friend, because these kind of businesses tend to be cash businesses with a lot of employee theft. And so you really want to make sure you're hiring somebody you can trust. Even though you can do inventory control, you can count the number of flower bunches you had when you started and how much you had at the end of the day. And, you know, does it reconcile? Does the amount of money match? But there's always ways to steal. So you generally want to hire somebody who is your friend, somebody or relative, somebody you trust, and then treat them well so that they're not inclined. Because believe me, friends and relatives can also screw you. So, but the best insulator against that is to treat them fairly, not self-denyingly, but fairly, so they'll feel they're getting a fair shake in the equation. Then you clone these in 2, 3, 4, 5 locations until you've made a decent living, not 10 or 20. Because if you open 10 or 20 locations, the quality invariably goes down, or you end up working 90 hours a week and you end up being yucky to them and to everybody in your world. So the notion is you don't need to make more than $100,000 or $150,000 a year. In a given small little store, you know, like a flower stand, you'll probably net you $30,000 a year. So you don't need more than 3 or 4 or 5 to do well enough. If you need more than that, you probably are too big a spender and are emphasizing materialism enough. Anyway, so cloning a shoestring business, I think, is a great idea. My board operator has asked me this question. Most businesses fail in the first year. Shouldn't new businesses budget with the expectations they'll run at a deficit to start? No. That's the beauty of these simple businesses. Notice when I talk about a flower cart or flower stand, the startup costs are trivial. They're almost nothing. So you should be able to making money from the first week. Of course, it takes a while for people who say at the BART station to know that you're there and make you part of their mind. But I'm not asking you to open a storefront. Storefronts cost a fortune or cost a lot of marketing. The simplicity behind something like a flower cart is you don't have to have an advertising budget. Your advertising is right there at point of purchase, which costs you zero as people are leaving the BART train. There's a million little, and I really love the question, there are a million little embedded benefits to a business like a flower stand. Let me go over them again and I'm going to go to the phones. So, number one, there's no trend risk. Flowers are not going to go out of style. It's not like some software, some cool medical device that's going to be replaced by something better in a month or a year. Also, there's less to go wrong. You develop some cool new device, and it's likely to not work quite properly under certain circumstances, and now you're left holding the bag. Flowers work. As long as you do it ethically and you buy your flowers fresh and you're careful to buy varieties that don't wilt in 2 days, you'll do fine. And again, your startup costs are low, and there's no ethical problems. You're not having to do anything sleazy. It's a clean, clean, clean business. Right? So that's why I love these simple, clonable businesses. And they don't have to be flower. Just tick off out of the top of my head a bunch of others. There are people who, for example, are in the business of simply installing and removing real estate signs. You know those big real estate signs that on people's houses that are 4x4 posts? Well, those are a pain in the butt to put in and take out. Well, there is a simple little business that requires nothing to start and can do well. Or how many people, I don't care, again, the employment rate is so misleading. The actual earnings per household earnings are flat, and the labor participation rate is the lowest in 37 years. So ever more people are having to pull in their, tighten their belts. So people who were living in a house and had a garage are converting it into a bedroom or a store, or using space more efficiently because they got to tighten the belts. Well, what if you are a handy person and you're good at cleaning out a garage and putting in shelves or putting in a bedroom or putting in a home office? Those are relatively simple, timeless businesses that don't require a lot of investment. If somebody hires you to clean out their garage and put in shelves and cabinets, they're paying for it. You don't need a lot of money. You need some basic tools. So that's the reason for these simple, simple businesses. That's the answer, both ethically and risk control, so you don't have to be one of those businesses that go out of business in the first year. Okay, you want some help? I'm here to provide it. That's all good general advice, but I care about helping you as an individual. So if you've got a career problem, self-employed, unemployed, want to run a business idea by me, somebody you care about who's lazy and is not doing anything, and she says, I'm a procrastinator, I'm fear-filled, whatever the work-related problem, I can usually help. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello, it's you. Hi, are you there? Hello. One last time. If that person is gone, let's go to the next line. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. Hi.
Yes, sir. I was wondering if you have any recommendations on being just in... I live in San Francisco right now. It's very expensive.
Yep.
It's
crazy.
It seems like a great place to do anything, though, you know?
Well, it's a great place to visit. You know, it's like I take hikes with my doggy Einstein, and I go to some of the richest neighborhoods, and I see beautiful houses and beautiful gardens. It doesn't cost me a thing. I just go. So I consider San Francisco in many ways a great place to visit, but it's just ridiculously expensive to live. You can't park your car ever, you know, and public transportation takes two or three times as long. So I like San Francisco. I like the restaurants. I like the theater. I like the museums. I like visiting. Would I pay the cost to live there? No F way.
That's good advice already. Let's see. I'm just wondering, do you have any advice on, like, you know, starting a small business or something like that?
Of course I do.
In a situation like this, you know, living in a place that's too expensive, but you still want to try and do something on your own rather than working for other people.
Yeah, well, you know, I might run my business in San Francisco, but I live in Oakland. I would live in Oakland where prices are a lot cheaper, and I wouldn't, you know, there are some fancy neighborhoods in Oakland. I would avoid those, like to play, because they're also ridiculously expensive. I wouldn't want to be in a totally terrible, dangerous neighborhood. You know, I know a few of those in Oakland. I'd be in a middle ground. I'd be in a neighborhood that was reasonably safe and modest. And I'd find a little, I don't need a lot of square footage. I'd control my costs. I'd rent probably a basement apartment with a nice window, or a room in somebody's house, or a backyard cottage, or something, or my rent, because rent is the big cost.
Yes.
I'd rent something cheap that was fine and small. I don't need square footage, you know. I don't need that crap. That will free me up to have some money to run my business, to live my life, and to spend my money on things I enjoy and are needed. So that would be the big deal. Then in terms of driving, yeah, car gives me a lot of freedom. Mass transit makes me crazy. It takes three times as long. But I would drive an old beater. I would drive some old, to you know, like a Toyota Echo.
That's what I have. I have an old Corolla.
Right. Those are the best cars. They're unbelievably reliable. And you get one that's, you know, 20 years old and say, oh, my God, it's there. But it's not used up. Those cars are, you can buy them for $1,000 to $2,000, and they still have plenty of life in them. I'm not a brand loyal person at all, but Toyotas are awesome. So I'd get some old, reliable, small Toyota that gets great gas mileage. It also costs nothing to insure. So now I've cut my costs to where I can eat. And I don't go out to eat a lot. I'm going to go and eat simply. You know, the best, the healthiest foods are fruits and vegetables, and that's cheaper. You know, I go to Trader Joe's and I buy a pound of Milton's 100% whole grain bread. Costs $3.49, lasts me a couple of weeks. Fruits and vegetables. You know, when I finish this radio show, there is a wonderful Latino fruit market and vegetable market where the fruits and vegetables are a third of the price of Safeway. So I go and buy tomatoes for like 49 to 79 cents a pound, where if I go to Safeway, it's $3 a pound, let alone the farmer's market where it's $3 a tomato. So I do, you know, I live in a way that is doesn't deprive me of quality of life, but enables me to not be scared crapless. And now I'm able to, and I don't go out for $10 drinks. I like a glass of wine. But you know what? $2 Chuck for $2.49 tastes essentially as good as those $20 wines. And indeed, Consumer Reports did a review of wines, both red and white, and Trader Joe's came out near the top, better than $20 wines. So, you know, I have my basic life, and I'm not stupid about money. And now I can start a simple business. So I'm living there, but let's say I like the idea of working in San Francisco and having my little business in San Francisco. I want to go where the money is. I want to follow the money. And in the financial district and the tourist areas are where the money is. So I'm going to have a simple little business that's ethical, whether it's going to be food's a pain in the butt because the city and state regulations are bizarre. I'll have to spend thousands of dollars for some food cart, $50,000, $100,000 in the permits, and I won't even be able to space. So I'm going to sell something that is a simple but ethical and wonderful product, whether it be flowers or it be scarves or it be purses or it be baseball hats or it be anything that is high profit margin, no trend risk, fair price, and location is everything. I'm going to find the best damn location that I can find where there's a lot of foot traffic with money. That's in a nutshell. What's your reaction to that?
No, this is great. I was recently thinking about starting a project of doing something as simple as keychains and then, you know, taking it around to certain places. It's definitely a very low-cost thing to make, and you could probably sell them for a lot of money. It's just the time.
I didn't hear the word. What was the word you would say? What was the word?
Well, I was saying keychains.
Keychains.
Yeah, something as simple as that, you know, but it's the effort and the time of making something like that to be able to sell it. But, it's just trying to find the right type of small business to start.
All right, let's take that. Keychains are going to succeed and fail based on three things.
Yes.
Are they really? Everybody's got one already.
Exactly.
So it's got to be good enough, attractive enough, or easier to use enough, or whatever it is, probably attractive enough, that's going to make somebody spend $20 on your keychain, or $15. They can't be $5. It's never going to be worth it. But it's got to be attractive enough to the target market, not to you, not to me, but to the target market, whether the target market is rich business types in the financial district or the tourists of San Francisco. It can't be the schlock that's going to appear in those stores. You've got to figure out a way to create one, and you should not be doing the making, because that the making is $10 an hour work. You can design it, and you find one of your buddies who either has money already and just loves working with their hands and will do it creative work for 10 or 15 bucks an hour. They make it. Your job is to get great locations, maybe find retailers willing to take it, and then once you've got that stuff produced in quantity, then you got a business. Make sense?
Okay. Yeah, no, it totally makes sense, man.
All right. Well, I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Feel free after you've made progress, feel free to give me a call and let us know how it worked, and then I can give you additional advice.
Thank you so much, sir.
Take care. Bye. All right. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, my name is Lauren. I live in San Francisco. I just moved here from New York, and I'm kind of at a crossroads in my career and was hoping you could help.
Sure.
Thank you. So my background, I graduated in biochemistry, and I wanted to go into business, and I was able to get into medical device sales.
Right.
I'm a Plymouth rep, not a sales rep, though, so I have no true sales experience in terms of having a commission and that sort of thing. I want to continue my career in business. I feel like I'm kind of pigeonholing myself in the medical device industry, and I'm wondering one of two things. One, I'm finding it hard to be able to get interviews or get those face-to-face conversations with people in the tech industry, which is kind of more where I would like to go because it's a little bit faster paced. And I'm wondering if I should go back and get my MBA to make myself more marketable, or kind of maybe take a step back take some classes in coding. I'm just kind of
okay. Let's start with we're going to start touchy feely, and then we're going to get more no nonsense. Look at the goddess within yourself, Lauren. Would the goddess within you say you should be selling something? Would the goddess say you should be managing people? Would the goddess say you should be in research and development? Would the goddess say you should be at the bench? You majored in biochemistry. What would the goddess within you, as you're looking forward for the not your whole life, but say the next 5 years of your life, what would the god or 10 years? What would the goddess say you should do?
Really, what I would love to do is marketing and/or management.
Great, excellent. And let's say there were, have you ever been to the eye doctor?
The eye doctor?
Eye doctor, EYE, you know, eye doctor, like fitted for lenses, contact lenses or glasses?
No, I work for...
I'm asking if you... we're going to play a game. Forget about that. Let me just explain this. When one goes to the eye doctor and is fitted for contact lenses, the doctor asks you, is it better with lens one or lens two? And then you pick one, and then he gives you more lenses, and eventually you can't tell the difference, and you feel like an idiot. But it helps narrow in on things. So I'm going to give you some choices about the path to you getting into marketing, okay? Is the best way for you to do it with a single course or by taking a whole master's full, given who you are?
That's a good question. I think I could go both ways, but I think I'm kind of a full degree kind of person.
Okay. Would you rather spend 2 years getting a master's in marketing, or would you rather spend 2 years in a combination of apprenticeships, articles, going to boot camps? Which of those two feels more like what would be best for Lauren?
I think I would be more successful if I spent 2 years doing a master's. However, I'm concerned I would lose out on real-world experience that I could be gaining if I were to do, essentially courses at night and boot camps and apprentices.
Great. So what if I say we're going to do a hybrid? And again, now we're on. The hybrid is this. The hybrid is you're going to read a book on tech marketing. You're going to start by Googling tech marketing and reading a half a dozen articles. And every time you come up with, you read a nugget that you find useful, you're going to copy and paste it into a word processing file called Nuggets. That's going to very quickly get you some expertise. The article is the most underrated resource in the universe. It is the distilled wisdom of an expert, and if it came up near the top of a Google search result, it's more likely than average to be a good article. After you've done that, which cost you nothing and you could do it in an hour or two, you are then to go to Amazon. And you are to search their books collection on the term tech marketing or technology marketing or high-tech marketing or whatever. And you are to find the book that most sings to you. As you look at the table of contents, you look inside the book, you read the reader review, you say, this feels like my next step. You are to buy that book. You don't have to read every word of it, but you are to carefully read the sections you want. And again, every time you come up with a nugget that you feel like, oh, that's interesting and important, you are to put it into your nugget file. And the advantage of buying that book in Kindle format is you can simply copy and paste it instead of having to actually type it in. Then after that, you're going to reevaluate and you're going to say, do I really give a crap about marketing and tech marketing anymore? If so, great. Then you are to take a course. Then you are to look for a job. And you're going to have this nugget file as an as something that you are going to convert into a one- or two-page white paper on current trends in tech marketing. When you apply for jobs in marketing, that will serve as a work sample. If you get a job, great. You're going to learn on the job. Then I want you to simultaneously take a course in tech marketing, whether it be a Udemy course online or an in-person course or a course from the American Marketing Association. And because you're working at the same time, you will have some concrete experience to hang your knowledge on. At that point, if you still feel you're hungry, you can then look into MBA programs with a specialization in tech marketing. How does that plan feel to you?
That sounds really good. I like that a lot. Well, and I feel like it could work the same for management. So let's do, like you said, I'm not impressed by my nuggets or it's not the way I want to go. I could do the same thing with management.
Precisely. 1,000% right. And on that lovely point of agreement, I wish you the best of luck. As always, feel free to call back either to give us the results, your successful or failure results, or could you, if you're ready for additional advice, I welcome you. I thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Take care. Okay, give out the phone number one more time. If you or someone you love needs a work, has a work-related problem, I do what we call workovers. I love helping you, and so if you want the help, this is the last time I'm going to give out the phone number, so if you're a procrastinator, this is the time to call. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, is it me?
Yes, it is.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am going to be 60 this year, okay. And I have been very fortunate in my life to have two careers that I loved. One was in the New California Food Movement back in the 70s and 80s. And then for the last 25 years, I've worked in an arts-related field that I love. I can't really get into it because there's some security issues, but I'm a really visual person, mm-hmm. and I am finding myself at age almost 60 even more curious and excited about everything, and I wanted to know something. The other important thing you need to know about me is I just recently found out I'm what is called a super recognizer, and that means that my brain functions by, I guess one of the first things that makes us human is the ability to recognize patterns. I recognize patterns enough to drive you out of your mind. It's a blessing and a curse. Mm-hmm. It's worked very good in both the fields that I've been involved with. Mm-hmm. But I have the kind of eye where you take me to the movies, I'm watching a first century crowd scene in the Roman Colosseum, and my eye immediately tracks to one of the 10,000 extras that forgot to take off his 21st century watch. I can't help it. That's the way my eye works.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if, even at this age, if I might have a career in film or what I could do with that.
Well, film always scares me because there's no money in film. No, you know, I don't like going where there's a lot of wannabes. But what I'm seeing is that you'd be outstanding, and I don't know if it would be too repetitive, in the area of quality control. Because, again, if you're able to notice the anomaly, the thing that's wrong, either... Given that you've had all this experience both in the food space and art space, I'm wondering if you might combine it all. Let's take those are the three legs of your three-legged stool. One is food, one is arts, and one is visual perceptiveness. What if you worked for, you know, I'm being a cliche here, but an organic, local, sustainable food company in their quality control department, looking at their packaging, making sure the quality of, you know, each item coming off the assembly line is appropriate, or in case of a local sustainable business, probably not an assembly line, has been handcrafted and hand gently put into the bottles or whatever it is. What if you worked for one of those kind of entities?
Sounds possible, I guess. I really have a good eye that way, so
right.
Maybe that's the way to go.
So here's the deal. Where do you live?
I live in East Bay.
Right. So, you know, I would because there's so much local stuff that's, you know, that's produced locally and sold locally. So you live in Oakland or Berkeley, someplace like that?
Berkeley.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, you know, I would go to Whole Foods, and I would go to Andronico's, and I would go to maybe Piedmont Market or whatever, and go up and down the supermarket aisle shelves and look for locally created, locally sold products. So in other words, they're obviously successful enough to have gotten into Whole Foods or places like that. So they're viable. And if you find products that you find intriguing, look at the label and see where they're based. They may say based in Emeryville, based in Hayward, based in Berkeley, whatever. And that's going to be an easy way to identify companies that are in the space that you're interested in. Then I would encourage you to use a method that I mentioned at the beginning of this show called Call, Email, Call, where after hours you call the head of this small, local, sustainable, organic, whatever company and say who you are, that you have had two successful careers, both in the new food space, the healthy food space, I don't know, raw foods or whatever, mm-hmm. the art space, and you also are very visually sensitive and perceptive and are able to really capture a lot of detail. And you thought that you can mention that you called this show and that I tried to, that this Marty Nemco dude tried to amalgamate those into this package, and it seems like working in the area of quality control or something related might be useful. Do you think we should talk? And you do that, you say that, leave that in a voicemail after hours, then you send an email that reiterates that, and then a week later, if the person doesn't call you back, you follow up with a phone call to say, see if that, you know, it's fallen through the cracks. And that would seem to be an easy way to test out whether this is at all viable. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess it does.
Okay.
I have to think on that, but that sounds really good.
Well, no, we're not allowed. We meditate on that. This is the Bay Area. We don't think on it. We meditate on that. Okay. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello?
Yes, it's you. Hi.
I'm in the position where I have an offer, and there's going to be a background check, and then I'll start in 2 weeks. So my question is, I've made a few mistakes in my life. And,
so have we all.
What to expect, and it's not a C-level job at all, and I'm not driving, but I've had DUIs.
So is that the kind of mistakes you're talking about? You're talking about DUI?
Yep.
Yeah, it's nothing. So my way to deal with DUIs is to preempt. You know, it's an old rule in public relations, and it's not like I'm a huge public relations fan, but some of their principles are right. You just get the bad news out of the way earlier. If you don't tell them, they're going to find, say, look at that. Look at the DUI. I lead with it.
In this case, it's a multinational, and who knows who's doing the background and if that has anything to do with a local office. I'd rather not do that.
Well, that's my normal best advice, because what happens if you let them discover it, then they're more likely to use the mechanical method. It's he's got the DUI out. Whereas if you lead with it and say, if this is going to automatically eliminate me, fine, but this occurred here with the circumstances, I've not had one in 4 years, it gives you a chance to respond. If you just let it happen, you've got no chance to respond. You get rejected before you have a chance to respond. I'm a big fan of preemption.
Well, you did say it was nothing. Why would I be rejected? I mean, is it something or not?
It depends. Everything is gray area. I mean, if you know, there are ex-felons who get hired, and then there are people who, have smoked marijuana once who don't. So, you know, there's no guarantee. The best solution normally is preemption.
What does come up on a background check?
Everything. It could be it could be your credit, your bankruptcies, your criminal record, not just DUIs, but, you know, misdemeanors, felonies, if your taxes were impounded, those are all public record. Those can come up. Now, there are legal cases. The Obama administration does not want those to be considered because they disproportionately impact African Americans. So they are filing lawsuits against certain employers to say that is using the disparate impact theory, legal theory, that the credit checks and even criminal records should not be considered, but that is certainly still open law, and many employers do believe it is fair and appropriate to do credit checks, criminal checks, etc. And so to this point, as of March 15, 2015, employers do check those things typically and do consider those as evidence of how trustworthy an employee is likely to be.
Okay, thanks.
That's the straight answer. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, Marty. I just wonder, you know, I've run into a lot of these multi-level marketing types of situations.
Yeah, almost 99% of them don't work.
And I was just, wondering what you thought.
99% don't work. You know, there's always the few. Too many of them end up being intentional or unintentional Ponzi schemes where, yes, the people who start, the first few people, make really good money because they were really driven and motivated when they first started the company, and they found a lot of downline people and whatever. But these days, you know, most people who are in multi, you know, Nu Skin or any of the rest of them, Amway or they tend to, and there's, you know, water filters and all the rest of them. They tend to either make you buy a lot of inventory, or you end up just putting a lot of work on on your own without remuneration. Remember, multi-level marketing started in the pre-internet days. Amway was the first of them, and because back then there was no internet, so it was, you either bought it at your local supermarket or that was it. But now with almost every product so easily available, especially on Amazon, but a Google search away. You know, whatever the product you want, you know, it's available and highly price competitive on the net or in these mega stores, whether it be Whole Foods or it be Walmart or whatever. You know, there is very little reason to deal with somebody in a multi-level marketing situation. So those today, 99% of multi-level marketing operators fail, and the only people who make money are the people who are really upline, the founders are the really early people who are getting a piece of the action. So there are better options. Even in a tough job market, there are better options normally than multi-level marketing.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I would much rather be optimistic, but I can't. So let me try to end on a more optimistic note. Again, I was talking earlier about some of the better self-employment opportunities that might be worth considering. Because I have a kind of a white-collar mindset, it's who I am, and most of my client base is, and most of the listeners are, I tend to focus on careers that are more white-collar oriented. But one of the most important self-employment opportunities that people don't consider are what I call mission-critical repair. Things like, for example, magazine printers. Those companies that print a magazine, they can't afford for their machines to go down. And yet those massive machines, they have many moving parts, and they need maintenance. They need repair. That's the sort of repair business that can be lucrative because you're dealing with fat cat clients dealing with a very mission-critical object, and so they were willing to pay big-time money. Other examples are like machines used in hospitals, like machines used in operating rooms, commercial airplane engine repair, avionics repair, that's the technology that's involved, parking meter repair, ATM repair. You know, those, and especially business-to-business. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, things that people have, their computers. There's enough computer repair people that you'll be getting $50 or $70 an hour, but you're not going to get enough of it. But if you are a specialist at repairing commercial printing presses or, you know, MRI machines or robotic repair stuff, big robots that are used for manufacture, that's highly specialized, highly mission critical. And that's the kind of self-employment that can pay enough per hour that you're not going to be struggling and not having to work 50 hours a week to make a middle-class living. Another example, and now back to the white collar. We are, ever more of us who are busy, if we're single, we recognize the power of the internet to find a dating, somebody to date. But many of us are nervous about creating our own profile. How much do we reveal? How do we say it? How funny do we be? How not funny? What kind of pictures? What do we say what we're looking for? I'm not sure quite what I'm looking for in a romantic partner. There's a million things. So it's very important for many people. They care a lot about meeting Mr. or Ms. Right. And so it's something they're willing to pay a consultant to help them craft their online dating profile and maybe even in screening. So that's a wonderful, more of a white-collar, again, completely ethical business, requires no money to start up, and so, and very fun, because unlike in some of the yucky, scary kind of fields where you're dealing with disease or whatever, you know, you're helping people on one of the positive sides of life. So online dating consultant can be a really, really good option for a self-employed person who wants to start something without a lot of startup costs. And you can obviously target by advertising on singles websites. I am not saying that self-employment is easy. But these days, getting someone to hire you for a good, stable job isn't easy. It's really hard. It may be worth a shot, especially if you're using these simple methods that I'm talking about. After all, that enables you to go instantly from unemployed to CEO, right? All right. That is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. As you know, the show is nothing without you. So please join me again next Sunday, 11. I mentioned robots a moment ago. As it happens, I'll be talking with Erin Rapaki about robotics in the workplace, the present, the future, the jobs that are being created, and the jobs that are being eliminated. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.